The 2010 edition of The Best American Sports Writing has appeared on the bookstore shelves. Glenn Stout, the series editor of the collection, joins me now in the studio. Glenn, nice to have you in Boston.
Always nice to be here, Bill.
And joining us by phone is ESPN.com and ESPN the magazine senior writer Wright Thompson. He has a story featured in this edition of The Best American Sports Writing. Wright, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure.
Glenn, the guest editor this time around is Peter Gammons, whose baseball expertise is such that he's known to his colleagues and others as the commissioner. Were you surprised that he didn't pack the book with baseball stuff?
No, not really, because I think, you know, Peter has certainly had interests in other sports. I mean, a lot of people might not be aware of it now, but at one point he was covering hockey for Sports Illustrated. So he's not just a one-note pony. And you approach this book as a reader or as an editor, in search of great writing, not in search of stories about a particular something.
Wright, your story, Shadowboxing, tells readers about your search for a man who fought Muhammad Ali in 1961. How did you become involved in the search?
My phone rang, and, you know, many years along this journey, I thought maybe I should have just, you know, not picked it up, but I wasn't the... I mean, I was the features reporter at the Kansas City Star, and this boxer, whose name is Jim Robinson, who is quite the ghost, that there was some sort of whispers that he might have been from Kansas City. And so the autograph collector who first started this journey called me and said, "Do you know anything about this?" And I became obsessed, and I chased it and chased it and chased it. And so for the next 7 years, at, you know, first at the Kansas City Star and then at ESPN, every couple of months I would take couple of days, a week, however long, and pick back up and keep making calls and making calls. Mm. And ultimately, you know, I started not knowing anything about him and ended up feeling confident enough that he'd ended up in Miami to go down there. And, you know, it's really, really interesting because there's an autograph collector who wanted all 50 signatures of everyone who'd ever fought Muhammad Ali. Yeah. And he searched all over the world for them, and he got 49 of them, and then got stuck.
I want to ask you to read from the fourth paragraph on page 28. This is a point in the story where you are stepping back from the search for Sweet Jimmy Robinson, as he's called, and reflecting on the search.
Sometimes Jimmy seems close enough to touch, sitting patiently in the pool hall every day, while Singer and I and everyone else look for him in other places. I can see him hiding in the smoke, in the shadows. No past, no future, wearing charity clothes they gave him down at Camilla's house. I see his beard, and I imagine the long-forgotten passions that birthed his deep scar. I'm close enough to know what his mouth looks like, to see the teeth disappear. And then he's gone too, swallowed, a figment of the fractured memory of Overtown. Watching someone be forgotten is like watching them die, and the more people forget, the more it's like he never existed at all. He used to tell some story, they say, but I really wasn't listening.
That last sentence, "he used to tell some story, they say, but I really wasn't listening," would be sad no matter whom it was referring to, but somehow it's even sadder when the guy telling the story was a boxer.
It is. We just watch them in the ring, and no matter how beautiful or gruesome or sometimes both the fight is, there's always that knowledge in the back of your mind that this isn't for free.
Fairly late in Shadowboxing, you write, quote, "Naming the dead is one of our human responsibilities." It sounds as if that's something that occurred to you during the search for Jimmy Robinson.
It did. It became to me really about answering the question, what does it mean to exist? As strange as that sounds, but it became a responsibility to me. It somehow fell to me that there was this human being named Jim Robinson who, you know, lived and loved and fought and longed and was this person. And for whatever reason, it became my responsibility to give him, if nothing else, dignity in death.
Wright's story is preceded by Thomas Lake's The Way It Should Be, which appeared in Sports Illustrated. It's the tale of Mallory Holtman, the college softball player who carried an opponent around the bases so she would get credit for the home run that she hit, even though she'd injured her knee so badly that she couldn't get around the bases on her own. Glenn, were you consciously thinking, I better put something positive in there before the story about the lost boxer?
Not in that regard. However, I do actually pay a lot of attention as to how I order the stories in the book. And it's very intentional that those two stories are back to back. I found them to be two of the most compelling stories in the book, and they also set up a wonderful contrast and almost a bookend right at the very beginning, that here you have from the most one of the most wonderful and heartwarming sports stories that you'll ever read and one of the most tragic back to back, and that kind of exemplifies for me the full scope that we have in this book and the scope that we strive to have in this collection every year.
One of the stories in this edition that struck me as especially powerful resulted from Dan Le Batard's visit with former star NFL quarterback Bernie Kosar. He's divorced, he's broke, he's in terrible shape physically, and the story ends with Kosar saying, I just wanted to play football. Actually, I still do. Glenn, was this one of those stories that you knew would make the cut as soon as you read it, or at least as soon as you read the last line?
As soon as I read the last line, because a story like that can so easily be a cliche. Here's the guy kind of down on his luck, glory days are gone, and he's kind of tumbling a little bit out of control. But there's kind of this wonderful innocence with Kosar that's unabashed, and he's not unwilling to reveal that. And at the end, when he says he still really wants to play football, it's like, of course, they all still really want to be able to do it. We all still really want to be able to do it. But to have somebody admit that is, I think, pretty unique. And I think Dan Le Batard was, you know, spot on in using that to close out the story.
My guests are Glenn Stout and Wright Thompson, and we're discussing the 2010 edition of The Best American Sports Writing. You're listening to Only a Game. Half a dozen of the pieces in this edition were first published on websites, but in these days when print journalism is supposed to be dying, readers may be surprised to see that most of this year's stories first appeared in actual print, some of them even in newspapers. Does this suggest that there's hope for the old ways?
It always thrills me to come across a story like one in this book called Death of a Pitcher from a website called pitchersandpoets.com. He actually took the time in a website to write something with the same craft that happens in print. Now, I think increasingly that's actually happening. People are starting to take some time and craft things online. There's a tendency for blogs and whatnot just to dash things off, but writing is writing, and you have to give it all the same care and attention.
Right. Your story first appeared on ESPN.com. Do you go along with the idea that the best of what's appearing on the web is as good as what's appearing in newspapers and magazines?
I mean, I'm obviously incredibly biased, but yes, I do. I mean, I think there are pieces I read. I mean, our e-ticket Outside the Line series, I love. I mean, the editor is as an old school magazine guy as you get. His name's Jay Lovinger. He was the editor-in-chief of Life magazine. He was the editor of the Washington Post magazine. You know, so, you know, Glenn's included some by me in the book, some by other people, and they are just a testament to Jay and his vision of a world where these stories matter. And I mean, I think that ultimately where you find great writing, and I don't know if you guys would agree with this, but you find it where you have writers and editors who care about the craft and who want to work hard at the words.
In one sense, at least, each year is different because you have a different guest editor. And tell us a little bit about what we have to look forward to next time around.
Well, I'm happy to say that next year, for the first time, we will have a female guest editor, and that's Jane Levy, the author of the recent Mantle biography. We've asked female editors before, and it's just never happened to work out. They haven't been able to do it, so I'm really pleased that we'll be able to do that next year with Jane.
And Wright, do you have Jane Levy's address so that you can pack a brown envelope with clippings and send them along?
Clippings, you know, with $100 bills in between each page.
I'm still waiting to get that envelope.
Man, I want to be the editor again if that's the way it's working. I didn't get a dime from the
Believe
writers.
Me, Bill, it's never happened, much to my consternation. 20 years and not one single bribe.
Glenn Stout is the series editor for the Best American Sports Writing series published by Houghton Mifflin. Glenn, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Bill.
And Wright Thompson wrote Shadowboxing, which is included in this year's collection. Wright, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Anytime. Thank you.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Oliver Wyman, an international strategy consulting firm with 3,000 professionals worldwide. Oliver Wyman serves global 1,000 companies. OliverWyman.com. And Nuance, offering Dragon 11 speech recognition software for creating documents and emails and surfing the web all by speaking at Nuance.com. This is NPR.
Here's how you have a full day in Las Vegas. Number one, you dress up as Elvis to compete in the Las Vegas Rock and Roll Half Marathon. Two, you pause once during the race to get married and run through chapel. Three, at the reception following the race, still dressed as Elvis, you reveal that you are a doctor by giving CPR to a female fellow marathoner who has collapsed. Four, the woman whom you've revived gives you a weird look and says she's okay. Just another Sunday in the life of Claudio Palma, MD in Sin City.
Someone who cares.